Stephen King once said, "Writing isn't about making money, getting famous, getting dates, getting laid, or making friends. In the end, it's about enriching the lives of those who will read your work and enriching your own life as well." This is the Producers Lounge Podcast, the best podcast online for tips and tricks on producing great film, television, and web content. Welcome back for Season 2, Episode 14, hosted and produced by GreaterAndGrander.com. On this week's episode, we're chatting with Joelle Selner, who has written and produced animated and children's TV shows, including Super Slackers, which she executive produced. We discuss pursuing a career in Hollywood, effective networking, and how to deal with rejection. Joelle has written for some of the biggest animated franchises out there, including Lego, DC Superhero Girls, Sonic Boom, The Avengers, DC's Teen Titans, and even the Jackie Chan Adventures. Just a heads up, the audio is not that great on this episode, so if that's a problem for you, sorry about that. Here now is my conversation with Joelle Selner. Who are some of your favorite authors and philosophers? Because I open each episode with a quote, and sometimes I use those sources. So
I think out of authors, I was very inspired by Stephen King growing up. And I read scary books many years before I should have been reading scary books. Because I think, knowing that he had, scary movies out, and I couldn't go see the movies because they were rated R. And I wanted to read the books because I was really curious. And I think my mom was like, "Oh, Stephen King, I've heard of him. It's fine." So I was reading like The Stand at like 8 years old and all these gross depictions of dead bodies. But he just had this kind of like dark comedic tone that I just really loved. He's one of the people that, sometimes I've met people that have been inspirational to me, like one way or the other, or like actors that I admired growing up. But he's like one of the people that I hope I get to meet him in person.
And when you were growing up in Queens, I'm curious, what inspired you to get into the entertainment industry?
Yeah, growing up, I didn't even know anyone who was in the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was something that was incredibly well-connected people in California did, and it wasn't really even an option for me.
Interesting.
When I was thinking, and it wasn't until I graduated college and I was working in advertising, and I was talking to a professor. I was taking some screenwriting classes, like just for the fun of it, at NYU, and my professor sort of, I wouldn't say encouraged me to get into TV writing, but he's basically like, it's not that hard. Anyone can do it. Well, if he thinks like any idiot could do it, then I could be that idiot and do it.
Wow. That's
it is incredibly hard and not easy at all to do. I don't know. Knowing what I know now, I would have followed his advice.
Interesting. That's the most interesting, inspirational professor story I've ever heard. Like, you can do it. No, anybody can do it.
Be that idiot. And it's funny, I do a lot of speaking to classes, and my advice is kind of the opposite. I'm just like, it's really hard. Like, really think about whether you want to, especially people considering moving to LA, like I had to do. Just think if this is what you want to dedicate your life to doing, because it's not easy.
So you didn't get any writing gigs in New York. You kind of moved straight from NYU to LA, or?
Yeah, pretty much. I was working in advertising in New York, briefly, and it was kind of a tough job market, especially when you're just starting out. And I was at the point where I didn't have a job, and I had to move out of my apartment. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend who had a house in Manhattan Beach with a spare room. And she's like, hey, you know, come out here and stay with me on the beach and see if you like it. And I thought, I'll come out, take some classes at UCLA Extension, see if I could get a job. And I had a return ticket for a couple months after that. I was like, well, you know, it's a bust. You know, I've had a nice LA vacation and I can just go right back. And I ended up getting a job in advertising right away. As soon as I got here, and really liked my classes. And I met some people in the industry. So I was able to find out, you know, what different paths that they had taken, and really see that this could be a reality for me. So I stayed.
Nice. That's really cool. And it sounds like in that first couple of months, you were really juggling a lot with like classes, like advertising during the day, UCLA classes at night.
Yeah. No, I worked a full-time job in advertising. My first couple of years working as a writer, there's a lot of overlap. So yeah, I was working on getting some spec scripts because I'd never written a script before. Mm-hmm. And I moved out here. So I was kind of learning the craft and working full time so that I could pay rent, because I didn't have anyone funding my hobby. Yeah, just running around trying to meet people, trying to make contacts in the industry. Yeah, pretty much had no sleep and no free time for a good few years when I got here.
I'm curious then, you were really hustling the first couple or first few years. What was your big break that you were able to start getting gigs as a paid writer?
Well, I would say I'm still hustling. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if and when that ever ends, when you're freelance. But my first job was I had met another writer in one of my UCLA classes, and our teacher encouraged us to write together. She thought like a male-female team would be easier to get a job in TV. So we were writing together. We got into the Warner Brothers workshop together. And my writing partner at the time had been a writer's assistant and had a lot of connections and knew a lot of people. And one of the people he used to work with was running the Mary Kay and Ashley Olsen cartoon. And she liked our spec script, and she gave us what ended up being 3 episodes. So then, you know, we were produced animation writers. So we were able to take that credit and get a job on Jackie Chan Adventures, writing a couple of freelance episodes for that show. And then pretty soon after that, he decided that he didn't want to pursue writing full time. So I kind of went off on my own.
And at that point, after being in LA for a few years, that's when you left advertising and started devoting 100% of your time to being a paid TV writer.
It took me another few years, still working in advertising full time and still trying. But the problem with animation is, if you're working freelance, the pay is so much lower than live action. It's really hard to make a living, like unless you're on staff or story editor. So I was still getting like a couple episodes a year. So that wasn't enough for me to leave a full-time job where at that point I was making 6 figures in advertising. So it took me a while to kind of save up and really just feel like I had the confidence to have a legitimate writing career. Mm.
It's interesting you mentioned finding the confidence. What was the linchpin that finally said, I can do this for you?
Well, I started getting a lot more work. Mm-hmm. And making a lot more contacts. And I still had, you know, freelance advertising jobs to fall back on. Mm-hmm. So that way I was just able to put together a few years of doing freelance advertising and doing freelance animation scripts. And then I started getting into, you know, comics and video games, and I sort of like diversified my portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So finally I felt like, well, between advertising jobs and scripts, I'll have enough to survive on.
Okay. And one of the pieces I see in your IMDb, you worked on Teen Titans. Mm-hmm. And that was, I believe the episode was titled Bunny Raven or How to Make a Titanimal Disappear. I'm curious, because this was this your first time dealing with a really significant IP? I mean, obviously Mary-Kate, Ashley Olsen and Jackie Chan, they have their fans, but Teen Titans is DC Universe.
Yeah. So it was a wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working with great people, very talented team. And I did, it was like the first time I really went back and like did some research and started reading the Teen Titans comics. And I think it was a little bit after that I actually met Marv Wolfman, who created Teen Titans. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, thank you for creating it and giving me a job. That's a wonderful thing when you create iconic characters and a franchise. Like you're actually employing people down the line. So I'll obviously be grateful to the people who created the characters that I work on.
Okay. And out of curiosity, meeting Marv Wolfman, was that through Comic Book Sunday? Or was that a?
I think different... so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I first met him.
Got it. And for people listening who don't know, Comic Book Sunday was kind of a networking event. It would be, was it every Sunday or only a couple Sundays a month?
It was once a month.
Yeah. And basically, all of these writers and industry people would show up and just kind of exchange comic books, and then they turned into exchanging novels and exchanging screenplays, and eventually there was like big events with like a couple hundred people, I think, showing up. Right. Yeah,
and just really like iconic people from the industry. And you know, I still work with people that I've met at Comic Book Sunday, and it's funny how it'll just come up in conversation. When did I meet you? I think it was Comic Book Sunday, and we'll be pitching a project together. So a lot of work came out of those events, a lot of collaborations.
Interesting. And you mentioned earlier that you kind of feel like you're still hustling and still pushing. And I was wondering, like, what does hustling look like now compared to hustling when you, you know, first started looking for work?
It's a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when people didn't know really what I did, I didn't have much of a track record, it was just very difficult to get anyone's attention. Mm-hmm. That I would, it was more of an informational connection. It was like, you know, I was at this really low level, and even people like one or two levels above me, it was me going to coffees and saying like, you know, what is your job like? What advice do you have for me?
Mm-hmm.
And it was really hard because like when you're at the bottom of the food chain, like people who are working, they're busy. Sometimes they have families, like they have like anything else to do rather than meet with someone who like doesn't bring value to them, where it's, you know, one-sided like that. But, you know, mm-hmm. people did meet, and people were very generous with their time after, you know, canceling four or five times. But now I'll run into people and we're like, oh, let's grab coffee. Let's grab lunch. And people are very willing to talk about, like, oh, you know, what projects are you working on? What can we collaborate on? So it's, you know, just a completely different interaction. I mean, there are still people, you know, like the big producers who are looking for, you know, like A-list, B-list writers who are really, you know, we'll grab coffee at some point. And, you know, you feel kind of like pushed off because the stuff I'm selling isn't the stuff that they're buying. But I just feel like, you know, you can't take anything personally. Mm-hmm. It's never like a unless you're just a ridiculously obnoxious person, which not going to get that far in the industry anyway. It's really like people only have a very limited time in their schedule. And, you know, if it's not going to be like a valuable connection for both sides, then you might just have to wait until you sort of level up to where you are bringing value to the connection.
Very cool. I'm curious then, as far as like maybe what the stuff that you were doing originally when you started hustling, because I you know, the people who listen to this are probably going to be like, you know, film students and what have you. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, what was some of the things you did to hustle when you were first starting out that you wish you hadn't done, that you look back and were like, oh, that was a mistake. Why'd I waste my time with that?
I guess pursuing people that, you know, just weren't going to be interested in someone my level.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes just kind of a waste of time to keep emailing, like, you know, oh, you know, you said let's pick a date, and you have to, you know, be careful, like, you don't want to put anyone on the spot because people are busy and people forget, and I'm in the position now too where sometimes, like, you know, if I have deadlines, I don't have time to sit down and give advice to people. And I try to make that time. And when my time becomes available, if I remember to circle back, or sometimes they circle back with me. But yeah, there that, and on the other end of it too, sometimes I would get busy and just not follow up.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And just get distracted and just kind of think like, oh, well, nothing's going to come of this meeting anyway, so I'm not going to bother them. And I feel like you never really know what's going to come from a connection.
So, yeah.
It's hard to, you know, walk that fine line between being persistent and being annoying.
It's interesting you mentioned like not following up enough, because I feel I'm on the opposite end of that line where I've met with someone and then I'll follow up, you know, every couple of weeks, and then I will definitely turn into that annoying person. And yeah, that is a tough line to figure out, like when to hold them and when to fold them, essentially. So.
Yeah, and I always ask people, you know, how many times do you follow up with someone who doesn't return your email?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, for a while, I was like, oh, if they don't write me back, they don't want to see me. You're not realizing that, oh, when people get busy, they just forget about stuff. Like they're putting out fires on their productions. So they, you know, they barely have time to, you know, see their circle of friends, and a relative stranger is going to be kind of, you know, falling through the cracks. And sometimes I've emailed people like, oh yeah, you know, just wanted to check your schedule, and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, just completely, you know, I was busy, I was on a shoot, I was out of town, whatever. And then, you know, we did end up meeting. But it's difficult. I feel like film schools should teach classes on networking and hustling and getting work, because that's just, it's really hard to figure out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the one piece of advice I kept hearing in film school was remember people's birthdays and anniversaries and like send them a card. But now, like if somebody knows my birthday and it's not through Facebook, that just comes off as creepy to me.
It's creepy. I don't think I would like that. I feel like that's a little thirsty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless it's someone I know, if it's somebody that I've worked with or somebody that I would consider an acquaintance and they sent me a card, or I don't know if anyone sends cards anymore. Like they sent me like a little like text or birthday greeting or whatever. To be like, oh, that's really sweet. They remembered. If it's somebody that like I've never met or met a while ago and I don't really have social contact with them, then it's like, you know, you don't know me. That's a little, all right. Maybe just being a woman, like my hackles are up a little bit more. I don't know. And the anniversary thing is just weird. Maybe a work anniversary, but I don't have a steady job, so they wouldn't do that.
Anyway. Do any of us really? I mean,
people sometimes, you know, they're these production companies for like 5-6 years, and you know that's a job. Mm-hmm. You know 6 years ago you wrote this comic book, happy anniversary. You know, no one's gonna do that.
Yeah You mentioned something interesting, you know, because you're a woman, maybe your hackles are up, and I'm curious if when you were coming up as a writer, if you know if you feel comfortable talking about it, of course, you know, what obstacles or what potential pressure did you observe and receive coming up in the industry as a woman?
Oh, I remember there's one class I took at UCLA where they would have guest speakers come in from like agencies or showrunners, whatever. I remember this one guy came in and the class was, I was the only woman, and there was an Asian guy, and the rest of the class was all white guys, young white guys. Mm. So I was talking a little bit about the industry, and he's just like, yeah, you know, if you like start as an assistant, you know, you work hard, you know, you'll probably get on staff. And then he pointed to me and the Asian guy and said, except for you two.
What?
And it was a while. I was really young, and I was just like, so he has just said, I'm never gonna get a job in TV because I'm a woman.
Wow.
And yeah, instead of being discouraged, it just like pissed me off. I was like, well, whenever someone tells me I can't do something, then I just get really spiteful. I'm just like, I'm gonna get a job and, you know, show him. But it was weird, and sometimes you could kind of see like the subtle discrimination. But there were definitely times where it was blatant. At one point, my writing partner and I took this guy who's a writer on a sitcom, kind of an upper level guy. Mm-hmm. We took him out to lunch to try to get some advice and maybe try to get him to read our spec script, you know, spec sitcom. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the lunch, after we bought him lunch, we said, is it okay if we send you our script? And he just looked right at me and said, I don't help women because you're going to sleep your way in anyway.
Wow.
And I was like, you gotta be freaking kidding me.
Yeah, if I may, what a fucking asshole. Like, yeah, Jesus.
I was just like, what the fucking fuck? And I wanted to say, like, give me my lunch money back. If you're gonna insult me, why did I just buy you lunch? I'm broke.
Yeah, yeah. That's fucked up. So,
yeah, and yeah, you know, I think like any woman you talk to in the industry has, you know, similar stories that are way worse than mine. Like I've had comedians say to me, like, you know, oh, women aren't funny, you know, you shouldn't be writing comedy, you know, things like that. So I don't know if they're really obstacles per se, or just sometimes you just run into random assholes, and that's whatever industry you're in. I have friends who are like female engineers. Oh, you shouldn't be an engineer.
Oh, geez.
So it's really, it's not just limited to entertainment. It's mm-hmm. just limited to, you know, being a woman and who works.
Yeah, but to your credit and to their fucked upness, you have had a very strong career. You've been a writer for major franchises, including the Avengers and DC, and actually one thing I'm looking at, it just popped out of my head, is Thomas Edison's Secret Lab, which
I got to learn science.
Yay. But then eventually you actually moved up, not just to writer, but to an executive producer level on Super Slackers. And I'm curious what that experience was like for you.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was the first time I created a show. No, it's a web series.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because I was, approached by a producer friend that I was working with on another project. And it's like, oh, I know these people. They represent, at that time, you know, Vine was like the hot thing.
Mm.
It was like pre-TikTok. I think now they'd be TikTokers.
Right.
So just, represent.
Sorry, not to interrupt, but I find that timeline is always important to go over. Because otherwise you hear a story like this and you're like, oh, I got a job working, you know, on Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen show. And then 2 weeks later, I was creating a show. But no, it's...
it was a long time.
It was, yeah. The Mary-Kate Ashley Olsen one was back in 2002, 2003. Those were your first gigs. And Super Slackers, it aired in 2018. But did you come up with the series prior to that? Or?
Well, I think it took maybe like a year and a half to air.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely like something that the Vine stars smoked a lot of pot. They're like, we smoke a lot of pot and we like superheroes. So it's like, okay. Probably not the most original idea. Yeah, so I worked with David Silverman, the director of The Simpsons, who's credited as the show creator.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's just amazing, like what we did on like a tiny budget. And my friend Mike Blum from Comic Book Sunday, he has an animation studio, so he did the animation production and helped out with the directing. And you know, on this like no budget we made, but I think it's kind of like a cute, funny web series.
And I'm curious, over that year, was it a year to develop it or a year to produce it or both?
No, it went really, really fast.
Ah.
I think it was less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting for me, being usually I just write a script and that's the end of it. And I give it, you know, I hand it in and then it just goes off and, you know, people do whatever they're going to do. The rest of the team produces it. And I got to be involved in every act. Like I went to the recordings. I was looking at animatics. So it was like really interesting to be a part of production. And it was cool. Like I learned a lot.
That's awesome. What are some of the things you learned from that process?
Animation production is really complicated and very hard. I could not be an animator.
Mm-hmm.
And just interesting seeing everybody's notes, where, especially in comedy, like where you cut a scene so that the joke pops the most. Putting like the background, like where do you put background music in? Like how does the score work? Is going to the recordings was really interesting. And I would do a lot of that in advertising when I worked on in radio. But usually, like, if you're on a show, like, you know, Warner Brothers Animation, like, sometimes you can, like, observe a recording. Like, that's kind of like a treat. Like, sometimes I went to, like, the Lego Friends recordings, but I'm not running the recording. I'm there as an observer. Sometimes I'm also like, well, that's not how you pronounce that. Or, you know, let me, like, fix that line so, you know, people aren't tripping on their words. But actually being kind of running a recording again. We had other, like, a producer who was a lawyer and, like, rep the buying people. Like he was, like, the money guy. And we had, like, another investor, I think a couple other investors. So they all dealt with that. And I was just really just doing the creative parts.
And so were you managing the writer's room, or were you just doing all of the scripts yourself?
It was actually me and David and Mike to some point, because it was such a collaborative thing. Visual, like, animation is very collaborative visually. So there was a lot of, well, here's a joke, like, how do we make this a visual gag? So it was like my script would kind of be the jumping off point, and then we get together and, you know, just kind of bounce ideas off and, you know, punch it up.
And then you moved on to writing some other stuff after that. I'm curious, because last time we talked, we had gotten coffee and I had asked you advice on a show I was developing. And if it's okay if I talk about this, you were talking about how you were writing scripts for, you know, kids shows in Italy and in Europe and in the US. And it seems like as a Hollywood writer, you have a lot of avenues open to you, because you can bring that kind of the mystique of the, you know, successful Hollywood writer to you. Is that accurate, or would you say?
I think when you're dealing with some countries overseas, they definitely want, I don't know if I would say, like, mystique of Hollywood writer, because I don't consider myself like a name that's going to, like, make people watch shows. But I think they definitely look for Western storytelling. Like, there's a structure to Hollywood storytelling that we all learn. And sometimes other countries aren't taught to tell a story in that linear way. So they want someone, because they want to be on, you know, North American Netflix, and they want to sell their shows globally. So they want the default of Hollywood writing. And, you know, I think definitely in the last few years, like, there's so much great content coming out of other countries, like coming out of Korea and coming out of Spain with Money Heist, and France and Germany. And so I feel like other countries have caught on to the Western storytelling fairly well, and in some cases even better.
I'm curious, as far as branching out to those other markets, was that something you did on your own, or was that something that an agent or a manager was able to help you with?
Well, most of my jobs come through referrals. That I'll meet someone who's working on one of these international shows, or they're running it, and, you know, they hire me to be one of the writers. I know with the Italian company, it was through another writer that gave me a referral to his producer. And then I ended up, you know, working on, you know, two shows for them, which is great. And sometimes people find me through LinkedIn.
Really?
Yeah. So I've gotten some international jobs. just through people contacting me on LinkedIn from, you know, Asian markets, or did like a wonderful little graphic novel for an Indian company, and they just, you know, emailed me through LinkedIn from India, and I ended up like going over there to promote the book. And so I definitely keep up my LinkedIn profile.
That's really cool. I didn't even know that that was a thing.
Yeah, I definitely, because I write video games. I get a lot of video game offers through LinkedIn.
What have you worked on recently that you enjoyed the most?
I did like a movie that's now on Amazon. And it was really a lot of fun to do, because they gave me a lot of autonomy with the script. So it was kind of low budget. And we did have that, we were going to shoot it right before COVID. So it was on thin ice for a while. Then we did a COVID rewrite, so they were able to save it. But it was just, I really enjoyed working with you, Zach. It was a very positive experience, because they liked the idea and they were very supportive through the whole process. So that's always nice. Like, I feel like half of the battle is just, you know, working with cool people that you get along with. And that makes the like, it doesn't even matter sometimes what the project is. Like, if you have like a good team that's like really excited about the work that you're doing, that makes all the difference.
Let me also ask, what have you worked on recently that you learned something really amazing on?
I always like when I learn something new. I didn't know before. I can look at my credits. Actually, there was a show I did last year that isn't out yet. And it was set in kind of this like fictional icy town. And there was like this action sequence, and there's a scene on an iceberg, and I kind of had to figure out the physics of it. And like, I kind of learned a lot about like water and physics. And that was something that I never studied. And I was like, wow, this is really interesting. I love doing research.
It's really cool. And what are you working on now that you're really excited about, or have coming up that you're excited about?
All that, my current stuff, I have NDAs and I can't talk about.
Totally understandable.
One animated show that's really fun. And another game that I just am really enjoying the process and the team and the stuff that we're coming up with. I think it's just super cool. I also kind of miss, I was on Lego Friends for 3 years, and I missed that. I loved working on that show, and I loved the people that I was working with, and I really like loved the execs at Lego. It was such a great experience. I'm excited about, you know, all the stuff I'm doing now.
I've seen a few episodes of the Lego show, and I can see where it's a very fun show, just constantly using a lot of comedy in that show.
Yeah, I think it was, we had so much fun writing it, and we all had so much fun working together. And I think when you're in a good environment creatively, like, it shows in the work.
So let me ask, if you could go back and give yourself any advice back, you know, when you were taking that class at UCLA or even at NYU, what advice would you give yourself?
I was just asked that by a college class, and I had said, go to law school. which is not the advice anyone wants to hear. But if I had to seriously give myself advice, I think it would be to just take more risks and really, you know, bet on yourself. Because mm-hmm. it took me a really long time to just get the confidence in my writing and just to be able to persevere. Because there is a lot of rejection mm-hmm. and it's hard not to take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, at some point, like, you just have to believe that you can do it.
And that is Season 2, Episode 14 of the Producers Lounge Podcast. Thank you to my guest, Joelle Selner, for joining us. You can find out more about her by checking out the show notes and visiting our website at greaterandgrander.com. Our intro and outro music today was Julianne, The Night We Met by Evan Hodges. Our episode still image is from DC Superhero Girls, a production of DC Comics and Warner Brothers. If you have any questions or suggestions, we'd love to hear from you. Let us know in the episode comments. You can stay up to date by following us on social media at the handle GreaterGrander, all one word. Make sure to subscribe wherever fine podcasts are found, and also, if you like what we do, share this podcast with a friend. Join us next week for more cocktails and questions, and until then, keep producing dreams.